You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
The US and Israel's war on Iran and the subsequent closure of the Strait of Hormuz has fuel prices increasing across the country. As fuel prices increase, people are continually looking towards alternatives, primarily public transport and electric vehicles. With public transport use at a 7-year high last week and demand for electric vehicles increasing, demand seems to contradict government policy. Since the start of its term, this government has been cutting discounts to public transport and cutting incentives to buy electric vehicles. At the same time, the government has touted investments in LNG and offshore oil and gas exploration as the solutions to New Zealand's energy woes. As fuel prices continue to rise, so too does the cost of living, with prices in supermarkets already spiking and hitting consumers where many are already struggling. Despite the government's campaigning and signalling around cost of living, prices are continuing to rise without a similar increase to wages. For our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party, Simon Court, I asked him about the fuel crisis and the lessons that the government is taking. We've seen fuel prices going up these past few weeks as a consequence of the conflict in the Middle East, and Finance Minister Nicola Willis is still acting relatively confident in the news media talking about the effect on the New Zealand economy. What is the government doing to address the increase in prices?
Well, higher fuel prices are definitely hitting households right now, and people are feeling it every time they fill up. But you know, we do have to be conscious that these things are driven by global pressures. And so, you know, ACT would say the government's job is to respond in a way that actually helps people without making things worse. And I understand Nicola Willis, the finance minister, is getting advice on what options the government has available, and that there is an intention to move quickly and not wait till people are really doing it tough. But you know, any support that the government provides to people will need to be very targeted and temporary based on the actual energy or fuel costs that people are suffering, because we just don't want to repeat the mistakes of the previous government with broad inflationary spending at a time when, you know, New Zealand has just had its future credit rating put on negative watch by Fitch because of our debt situation and our spending commitments in the future.
Last week saw a 7-year high for public transport use in Auckland. However, there's also been reports of overcrowding on some buses and trains. Is this a sign that we should have invested more in our public transport infrastructure in the past, or maybe should be learning from this and investing more in future?
Well, it's fantastic to know that there is demand for this service. I mean, between taxpayers and Auckland ratepayers, they will have paid somewhere between $6 to $7 billion for the City Rail Link stations and services, which are due to come online later this year. So if people are seeing the benefits of using public transport, they don't have very long to wait before they get access to a world-class piece of infrastructure. But, you know, we've got to compare that to Wellington, where their regional council has had a look at patronage, and over the past 4 to 5 years, patronage has dropped off 30 to 40%. They got a whole idle bus fleet, and, you know, and trains with hardly anyone on them outside of a much reduced peak demand. And that's because people in this part of New Zealand have either chosen to work from home, or their employers have said you can work from home, or they're just deciding to work in different places and not come into the Wellington CBD. So look, it's horses for courses, but it's great that there's people fighting for a seat on the bus, and it bodes well for utilisation of this fantastic asset that's just been created for Aucklanders and CRL.
There's been calls from council and from the public and various activists as well for the government or for council to reduce public transport fares in this time where people are struggling with fuel prices. Is that something that the government's willing to look into?
Well, it seems counterproductive, doesn't it? I mean, you just on one hand saying there's never been greater demand for the buses, so and public transport, which indicates people are willing to pay for that service. So why on earth would the government, you know, smack itself in the face by saying, oh, now we're going to transfer a whole lot of money from one group of taxpayers to a group of bus riders who do seem willing and able to pay for it? That doesn't make any sense at all to ACT, but, you know, sometimes we are the only people who make sense. And so, you know, people are just going to have to get used to paying for things, paying a bit more for things in the meantime, I think.
And on that, people getting used to paying a bit more for things, we've seen prices go up as well, not just for fuel, but also for some products in grocery stores, some products in other stores as well, due to increased costs of freight and whatnot. Is the government, I mean, we've seen the cost of living go up in the past few years, and the government has not done a lot to, or it hasn't been very effective, rather, in reducing the cost of living there. Is the government planning any other changes to address this new spike?
Well, it's true that the cost of fuel means that the cost of everything from harvesting the vegetables and crops through to transporting food to supermarkets has increased as a result. I understand that the government is looking into what kind of targeted relief measures are possible for certain groups of people who are most vulnerable to these type of changes in the cost of living. But in terms of what the government has done, when the ACT, National New Zealand First Coalition government, came into office, inflation was running at 7% per annum. And between the extraordinary spending and borrowing of the previous government and the fact that, you know, large parts of the economy were essentially overheated and beyond capacity, like the building and construction industry, for example, the price of everything was going up much faster than it is now. We've got inflation down to around about 3%. And while it could be lower, what that means is that instead of prices compounding by 7% every year on year, we've actually got it down to a level that is very close to the Reserve Bank's target range. And so, you know, future New Zealanders won't feel the same things that current Kiwis do, where house prices spike by 30 to 40% like they did under the last government, and the cost of food, of basic food items, have increased significantly as well. So we have done a lot, and we've done that by reducing borrowing, reducing spending, particularly wasteful spending at the margins, and making sure that the government's own actions aren't contributing to inflationary pressures.
And I want to segue some of this fuel crisis stuff into the government's climate policy. We've seen right now, as fuel prices have gone up, some of the big winners or some of the big people who have been less affected are some of those who own EVs or hybrid vehicles, right? The government, at the start of its term, scrapped the clean car discount. How is that looking now with people, you know, those who have EVs are obviously not as affected by this fuel insecurity? Is that something that the government is looking back at and going, maybe we shouldn't have done this?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, what you're describing is the market working perfectly. You know, I heard an EV dealer on the radio talking about his sales from the previous weekend, saying that, you know, rather than selling 20 to 25 vehicles, EVs on a weekend, they'd sold nearly 80. Now, you know, the government doesn't need to give demand a push when demand is high. That is a fallacy, and that is why ACT exists, and that's why, you know, we are playing a really constructive role in government by continuing to remind people who would call for more transfers of wealth from one group of taxpayers to another. That's essentially what the EV subsidy scheme was: transfers from tradies, farmers, and people with large families who needed larger vehicles, a transfer of wealth from them to a group of privileged people who got, you know, around about $7,000 cash back to buy an EV. Instead of that, you say, hey, when fuel prices get a bit higher, people might actually switch to it of their own volition. And that's exactly what we're seeing, and ACT absolutely celebrates that.
And is this pointing to, as well, the government's also been investing a lot in, I mean, there's talks of the LNG terminal, there's the return to offshore oil and gas exploration, and there's been other climate policies there around reducing our reliance on clean energy sources and looking more into oil and gas. Is that coming into question now as well, now that we're seeing that the global oil and gas trade networks are a bit tenuous, you know, they're not as reliable as they may have seemed in the past?
Well, it's absolutely vital we have a diversified energy supply. And, you know, just push back on some of the potentially inaccurate things you've said. New Zealand has 85% of its electricity generation typically renewable. Sometimes it's been up to 100%. And renewables make up 45% of our overall total primary energy supply. That includes liquid fuels, stuff you might put in your car. So we're already very resilient when it comes to our energy diversity. But of course, we have to have natural gas. It powers all kinds of industries, including manufacturing. You know, if you buy a pie from the bakery or you buy a loaf of bread from the supermarket, it's more than likely it's been baked in an oven that's powered by natural gas. And the best way to ensure New Zealand's energy security is to make sure that we go out and we drill for and we produce our own indigenous gas here, and that, you know, if we do need to be connected to the rest of the world as a backup, we've got that through the LNG terminal. But there is no country in the world that is succeeding right now in delivering better quality of life for its people, but they've decided to turn off gas. You look at the UK, energy prices are at least two times higher than they would have been if they still had developed their own gas. You've got their energy minister saying, oh, we're not going to go back to the North Sea and drill for more gas, even though it's there, because they're still pursuing their idealistic net zero policies. You know, we have to make sure that the climate policies actually work and that they're actually affordable, because you can set ambitious targets, but if they don't stack up economically and financially, they won't be sustainable or durable. And that's why New Zealand is taking the path that we have, which is, you know, let the emissions trading scheme do the work, put a price on carbon, and then let consumers and industries decide how they're going to manage that.
And I think that's some of the big stuff here, the consumers and industries managing things themselves. You mentioned that the country at large is largely reliant on renewable fuel sources. However, people in their day-to-day lives are often using a lot of petrol in their cars, right? And this is something that the government has, I mean, largely encouraged, right? By scrapping the clean car discount, people have been pushed back into buying cars that use petrol. And many of the cars in Auckland CBD are not those belonging to big families or farmers or whatever. These big cars, these utes in Auckland, many people are driving alone in those every day. There's nothing in the back of the car. And so I think what I'm questioning here is the role of government in pushing this change. Should the government not be more involved in encouraging people to move towards cleaner cars, which are not only better for the environment, but also more resilient in times of crisis that we're seeing right now?
Look, ACT campaigned against the so-called clean car discount and clean car standard. It's nanny statism as it worse. You had the previous Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, wagging her finger from the beehive, telling people that they weren't allowed to drive utes unless they had a legitimate purpose to do so. They got kicked out, and the new government says, actually, you choose the vehicle that you want. If you're prepared to pay for the fuel for a larger vehicle, that's your choice. If you want to go out and buy an EV, well, right now, today, there's probably never been a better time to make that decision because of the price of fuel. That is markets working as markets are intended to do. There's a huge influx of relatively low-priced new EVs, including utes, if tradies want to go and buy a BYD. And judging by the number I see around in Auckland, they're pretty darn popular. So, you know, the ACT position would be there's nothing that the government needs to do that the market will not already do for you. And if the government does get involved, all that's likely to do is transfer wealth from one group of New Zealanders to another who probably don't need it, as we saw with the EV subsidies going to mostly wealthy people buying new vehicles under the previous Labor Green coalition government. And in the end, you know, we're going to have a huge influx of cheaper, lower emissions vehicles coming out of our major suppliers in places like Japan and China over the next decade that are going to largely replace the fleet that we've got now. But it won't happen because a government decides to start transferring wealth from one group of Kiwis to another. It'll happen because that's what markets do.
That was the ACT Party's Simon Court speaking to me about the fuel crisis and the lessons that the government is taking from it.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.